The Ticket.
Podcasts are brought to you in part by Lewis Jewelers, the official jeweler of The Ticket and proud partner of Michigan Athletics.
The Kitchen Door is now offering delivery. Let The Kitchen Door by Polo Fields in Ann Arbor do the cooking for you tonight. Treat yourself and your family to fully prepared meals to go, like gourmet fall off the bone ribs, southern fried chicken, or The Kitchen Door's signature fish and chips. Individual meals, meals for two or family four packs, all made the Polo Fields way. The Kitchen Door is located off Zeeb Road, and curbside pickup and delivery are now available. To place your order, go to thekitchendoorannarbor.com or call 734-998-1555. That's The Kitchen Door by Polo Fields at thekitchendoorannarbor.com. And Sam, pretty sure there's a guy in the studio by you that will endorse The Kitchen Door by Polo Fields.
Yes, he will. Yes, he will. That message is approved by one Mr. Steve Clark, is it not?
Absolutely. I mean, I had my wedding reception at the Polo Fields.
Let me just
say. So did I, Steve Clark.
Let me just say. How about that? I saw a different Steve Clark on Saturday. This wasn't regular old Steve Clark. This was like Steve Clark juiced up, revved up, fired up. A Steve Clark like you haven't seen before at the Slippery Noodle.
And with the family in tow.
That's right. He didn't even shy away from talking bad about Iowa. He said, damn it, I have some things to say that are critical of Iowa, and I don't care if I got to sleep on the couch. If I say him, I'm going to say him. Anyway, that was Steve Clark this weekend, Steve. You were preaching to me last weekend, Steve.
Well, we were preaching to each other. I mean, that was a fantastic broadcast at the Slippery Noodle. Other than the tent, that's probably the largest attendance that we ever had. If any Iowa fan showed up at the door, they took one step in, looked at it, and turned around and walked out.
Dude, the line that sprawled down the street was amazing. Ira, I mean, I don't know if you were outside to see the line, because I got there like 10 minutes before the show. You had to have someone get you in.
Correct, yeah. We had to send someone out to get you in because they had to confirm you were with the radio station. What I thought was really cool is, so the doors for the noodle opened at noon. And we were there, obviously, well before that setting up. And so at about 11:45, I looked out the window, and the line was growing. And then I looked out. It was right before 12. They're about to open the doors. And I'm looking at the line. I go, maize and blue, maize and blue, maize and blue, Iowa. They're going to leave. Maize and blue, maize and blue, maize and blue, maize and blue, Iowa. They're going to leave. And when everybody flooded in and maize and blue takes over, there was one table near us, well before you got there. There was one table of maize and blue, high top, toward the back of the room where we were. And they were both Iowa. And they're looking around. And I want to say it was halftime maybe of the basketball game, maybe it was right before the basketball game. I'm like, I'm going for a walk. I need some air. I got a lot of stress going on. I saw those Iowa fans leaving. Yeah, they didn't come back. And I did talk to one other Iowa fan who was friends of a friend, and he's like, yeah, I have other friends with me, and they refused to come in this place. So well done, Michigan fans. You took over the Slippery Noodle. It was amazing, and we did not have to deal with Iowa people, except for Steve Clark's wife, who was great.
Yeah, and you know the line was for the show, because, I mean, there's so many bars that you could go to any bar. Any bar down there you want. But those people stood in line, Steve Clark,
They wanted to see you. And they wanted to see the program, see the show up live in person. Doesn't necessarily mean, you know, they could make it for the tailgate. Haven't had much of a huge public crowd for the tailgate on Stadium in Maine this year for obvious COVID reasons. This was the opportunity to bring everything out. If you watch national radio shows or TV shows go into a bar at a site and see that crowd, we had that crowd.
We had that crowd.
And then some. And so I'm sorry, it sounds like I'm patting myself on the back. I really didn't have anything to do with it.
You did.
This is our team. But man, all of these years of waiting for it to be our turn, wondering if our turn would ever come, that was just simply amazing. Amazing is the right term to use in that one. And again, I mean, the grin is just from ear to ear. Was that way during the game and during the stadium. And 42-3.
Yeah, man. And by the way, we're going back. We'll be back at the Slippery Noodle next month. Just so you know, just calling the shot. Next time, though, Steve, I'm going to take a winter coat to the press box with me.
Yeah. Yes.
The only thing that kept you warm was the excitement on the field.
Sam, you're not used to that being in this studio?
No, it was colder in the press box than in the studio, which is saying something.
I think somebody opened the door and let it circulate inside. We were underneath a vent. My family was sitting in the upper levels, and they felt the same thing. It was freezing. They never took their coats off. At least we're getting some circulated air in here.
Heat rising is a misnomer apparently inside the Lucas Oil Stadium because it was not cold on the.
They were blowing air. I think that must be a COVID thing. They're blowing air in that press box. It's like, man, it's winter. Like, well, what are we doing? But hey, Michigan kept everything hot on the field, right, Steve Clark?
Yeah, I mean, everything. And so you asked me last week at this time, scare me. You're not scaring me. And I thought the one moment that I could tell you that could scare you is the fact that, you know, Michigan became the third team in the Big Ten to be ranked second in the country, and the previous two held it for a week. And we just saw teams, we even saw with other teams that didn't make it to number two. They got highly ranked, and they looked like they were peaking until the floor dropped completely off from underneath them. And so I was, you know, you asked me to scare people. I said, well, this will be the way to scare people, that, you know, Michigan's not at a peak, and now the floor is going to completely drop. And a lot of people for 15 years have been waiting for the other shoe to drop just when you get your expectations up. You're in denial. And I was like, well, maybe I could start to... Oh, see, they got me again. Lucy pulled the football again from Charlie Brown. And the thing is, this team is different. And you saw it, and Ira saw it first. You know, I go back and I look at the Washington game, and it's like, well, you know, Washington just lost to Montana. And you know what? We got lucky. Michigan got a bad Washington team at a bad time. That's great. So maybe we can get to 8 wins. Predicted them to lose at Madison, Wisconsin, despite Wisconsin being 1-2. This game's in Madison. Michigan hadn't won there in 2001. And Michigan not only won in Wisconsin, they won it rather handily in Wisconsin. And so, well, that is a great feather in their cap. Good for you. You know, I'm wrong with my season prediction totals. This is great. And then they went at Nebraska, which I thought was going to be a tough place to do it. And Cade made that statement at postgame on national TV. We're different. That's bold. Mm-hmm. I like it, but man, this is going to be a very hard fall in games coming up. You go win at Penn State the way they did. It looked like it was going to be a repeat of what happened at Michigan State. You give up the lead. You give up successive fourth down conversions on a drive in the fourth quarter. Then your offense follows it up with a fumble and a turnover on the very next drive, and then you're game over, and you know you're out of the Big Ten. And Michigan responded with first a defensive hold to 3 points, and then the Eric All touchdown. And you now just won in Penn State, and you've now won in Wisconsin. And then you've won in a grinder against Nebraska in the second half, and you start to think, okay, trap game, Maryland. No trap game. A destruction of the Terrapins. You guys pulled me around, circled the wagons a bit. We all picked a Michigan win over Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Got that, and at that point, you got to believe that this is a different team. You got to forget about the previous teams in your past, the number of times the football's being pulled away, and you got to go for it. And again, people were expecting Iowa to give Michigan a tough game, in part due to Michigan not playing 100%. Mm-hmm. Michigan just continued to get better. They just continue to get better, everyone. Game in, game out, they are getting better, and they are peaking, and there is no suggestion at all that they have hit that peak. They can continue to get better along the way and believe in themselves, in one another, offensively and defensively, doing the things that they need to do. I think Georgia is in for a surprise in a few weeks, because Georgia ain't giving Michigan any ounce of respect going into this one, are they?
They are not, Steve. I mean, everyone down there is convinced this game, done deal. Huh, Michigan? This is SEC. I was on SEC Network. You think Michigan has a chance to win? Oh, okay. All right. Look, all right.
All right. That SEC attitude has not stopped in 30 years. They, you know, SEC and Big Ten teams play in their venues, okay, and they automatically expect like a 20-point victory for them.
Come on, guys, it's because it means more.
And what they ignore is, I don't know what it is now, but for the longest time, Michigan had a winning record against SEC opponents in their venues, okay, for years. Like, we're not talking about 5-3 or 7-6. This is more like 18-9, something like that. I got to look that. I just thought of it in my head, so I got to look it up to see what it is. But Michigan was having a winning record over SEC teams in their venues during bowl season, okay? So they ignore all of that. And you just expect any time an SEC plays a Big Ten team, they treat it like a Big Ten team playing a Mid-American school team. Mm-hmm. Oh, we got this.
Yeah, man.
We got it locked up, and it's not true.
Yeah. So my point to people, and I want you to as we start looking at Georgia, this is by no means the Georgia breakdown, but as we start looking at them and what people are saying about them, people talk about that defense, talk about it being the best in the country. I have no argument with it being talent-wise the best defense that Michigan has faced. I also think that the reverse is true for them. It's the best offensive line, running back, tandem, rushing game that they faced. So it's going to be a different test for them. And it's why when I talk about how Michigan's going to approach this game, people look at that Alabama game and they say, oh, that's what Michigan needs to do, what Bama did. Well, a piece of it, the piece that they need to do is Bama, they didn't abandon the run. Now, they didn't run it as much as I think Michigan is gonna, but they kept that physical presence that they had to respect. Michigan's not gonna get a Bryce Young. You can hope to get a Bryce Young performance, right? So I won't discount that and say it's impossible. But is it likely? Can they plan to get a Bryce Young performance? No. But they can plan to lean on that run game like they have all year to have nothing else open up that throw game, Steve Clark, because this is a vaunted rush defense that they're going to be running into with these Bulldogs.
Well, that's the thing. The Bulldogs are a lot like Michigan. They want to play a physical game. They want to run the ball, take time off the clock. Their quarterback isn't the most dynamic of players in the Big Ten. And we'll talk a little bit about quarterback because that's one of the things that they, you know, are in angst about in Athens right now. But Georgia's 12-1, as everybody knows. They lost to Bama in the championship game 41-24. You know, after beating Clemson in the season opener 10-3, in which the only touchdown came from the Bulldog defense, Georgia's average margin of victory in SEC conference games is nearly 32 points, okay, while Alabama's was just shy of 13. Again, Georgia took Alabama for granted. Georgia is going to take Michigan for granted. That's just, there's no way avoiding of that. And the Bulldogs never played other than the opener with any type of scare or any type of fear. The only team that lost by less than 20 points was Kentucky. Okay, and they lost 30-13. I don't know if the All-SEC came out yesterday. As when I was looking at this on Monday, it hadn't been released yet, but you can probably expect that five members of the Georgia defense was on the first team defense. Four more on the second defense, and the other two are probably on the third team or the honorable mention type of deal. But Georgia's offense, not nearly as decorated, despite scoring a ton of points. I think they're going to have one All-American for Georgia on the offensive side, and that's their tight end. So that's something to look about as we look into future weeks of breaking this down. But the biggest controversy right now in Athens is at quarterback, where Stetson Bennett, where on the bright side, he's second in the SEC with a passing efficiency rating of over 175. And he's going into a championship game. He also, you know, leads the conference in yards per pass attempt. But he's also a pretty mobile guy with a lot of rushing yards and is rarely sacked. But on the negative side, Sam, for a roster that is built with numerous 4- and 5-star talent, Stetson Bennett is a former walk-on. Okay, who got his job due to a transfer from Justin Fields and some injuries ahead of him like JT Daniels. I mean, it was a nice story and it was considered cute by the Georgia Bulldog fans when he came out of nowhere to guide the Dogs to victories in 2020. But he kept the job, and it was revealed he just couldn't keep up with good offenses with dynamic quarterbacks. And so, again, there's this, I feel like there's a certain privilege. All these four- or five-star talents from a quarterback's a walk-on. Mm-hmm. He really doesn't deserve to belong in the club. I mean, I guess he worked his way in with hard work and grit, but, you know, we got to go back to a guy who's like a four- or five-star deal, and the thing is, he's been injured too much. And when he was healthy, he was a healthy scratch, mm-hmm. and he played sparingly. He hasn't had any real meaningful competition. So if you're Kirby Smart, and you realize that, wow, you know, some of these bigger games like Alabama and a dynamic quarterback, and you go back to the games last year against dynamic quarterbacks, we couldn't keep up offensively. So do I got to make a change knowing what Michigan has done in the last two games with their 42s and a great run game and an offensive coordinator that just won the Broyles Award as the nation's top assistant? Scheming things up. I mean, do I need to switch? And if I do switch, do I got a rusty quarterback coming in? And will that upset the chemistry? One of the reasons why I didn't make the change is we're winning by 20 points a game. We're on a roll. Mm-hmm. Why make a change? We're on a roll. So what if our guy isn't the most dynamic quarterback in the world? Look, I don't want to upset chemistry because it's not about just the quarterback. It's about the other players too and about how they react. So I think it's going to be kind of interesting to see what they do because they got things to think about.
Yeah, man. It is interesting to see how the certainty. And I wonder if these gaudy margins of victory have inflated things to an unrealistic level, because I thought that Bama game was revelatory. I mean, you had a lead. And when Bama started rolling and the defense all of a sudden isn't slamming the door like they had all season. Okay, now offense, now you got to pick it up. Now you got to run. Now you got to roll with them. We need you. Like Michigan's offense had to respond in Nebraska, right? Our defense not stopping them like they stopped. Need you to respond. They weren't able to match. This is not your typical Bama defense this year. Still a lot of talent on it.
It's not their typical offense either, but go ahead.
But when charged with matching,
right,
they couldn't do it, Steve.
Right. No, they couldn't. And, of course, the other thing that's going on is the Kirby Smart problem against Alabama. He's now 0-4. So why a certain blowhard that is now upping Jim Harbaugh for Coach of the Year was making a living off, demeaning Harbaugh and demeaning Michigan, he's now turning his attention to Alabama because Kirby Smart's, 0-4. So this isn't Alabama that Georgia is playing this time around. But, in a basketball season, Sam, this, that a team that is really on a roll and doesn't have any competition, they're always going to have their moment in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. It always seems like in the Big Ten conference year, you get half the schedule played, and there's this team in the Big Ten that's undefeated. And you start thinking about an undefeated season in Big Ten play. And it's people like me that got to say, slam the brakes. No matter what team it is, whether it's Michigan, whether it's State, whether it's Illinois, whether it's Iowa, I said, you're going to have a problem. And what happens to these basketball teams is they run into a bunch of games in late January, early February, and they lose 3 or 4. And then they get their groove back, and they might end up winning the conference anyway. But if this is what's going on with Georgia, okay, all of a sudden everything was coasting, and then all of a sudden they've got a hiccup. There's a little bit of doubt that creeps in just a little bit, even if you don't say it so publicly. Maybe Michigan can catch Georgia at a good time where they're starting to, while they're trying to figure things out, got 3 weeks, but you play that game, you win that one, and then you're playing in the national championship, and Georgia's wondering what hit them. But right now, Michigan's playing at a peak, and Georgia just experienced their first loss, which is always difficult for an undefeated team to get over with.
Yeah, I like Josh Gattis with 3 weeks to figure this out. Figure out, okay, how do we run the football on this team where I think the toughest matchup for Michigan is going to be right in the middle.
Yeah.
Right in the middle is going to be the toughest matchup.
Jermaine Johnson?
How big? 6'6", 360 pounds there, Steve Clark?
He's huge. I'm sorry, he's from Florida State.
You're talking about Jordan Davis.
Jordan Davis is 6'6", 340, according to my list.
I saw 360.
Well, you know,
let's
what?
Let's split the difference, look, 350.
Look, when you're 340 or 360, that could be one week versus another.
Right.
Isn't it?
Right.
when you're that big, I mean, you're 360 1 week and you're 340 the next week.
He's not using rewind. that's not going on with Jordan Davis right now, right? Big load. And, you know, you got to give Andrew Vastardis a lot of credit, right? Andrew Vastardis has worked his way. I mean, we talked about Stetson Bennett working his way into the starting lineup as a walk-on. Andrew Vastardis has done the same thing and has had himself a really good season. What I like about Andrew Vastardis is he'll fight you. Like, I think he is best on the move, but in the trenches against maybe some of the bigger guys, he won't punk out. He won't tap out. Like, you know, you might have a size, a weight, a strength advantage, but he is at least going to scrap with you. This is a different scrap, though, when you talk about Jordan Davis. And I figuring out how you help balance that matchup, you know, how you give him more advantage blocks, double teams, maybe, and this is how I think one of the adjustments is going to be, a little more in this game, running to the outside, a little more J.J. McCarthy in the run game, Steve Clark, sure. In the run game.
Sure. And so, you know, Jordan Davis is going to probably be a first-team All-American, okay? And he commands double teams all the time. So that's a little bit different than what Michigan is used to. Michigan, I think, does have the ability to run outside.
Uh-huh.
And maybe it might be a game where you see a little more Blake than you see Hassan for that reason. Not that Hassan can't run on the outside. I'm just thinking about, you know, who's your best outside runner? It might be Blake. Hopefully he'll be, you know, 100% healthy by that point. And then, of course, you know, you've got N'Kobe Dean as a linebacker, too, to be able to get through. And I haven't broken it down exactly where he is all at the moment. I'm still kind of reveling. Am I allowed to revel for a few days?
Revel,
then
Steve.
Maybe next Wednesday we can break down all these positions. But, yeah, N'Kobe Dean's an inside backer, okay? And so you have the nose tackle up front, and then you got Dean right behind him. That may
getting
suggest,
free
as you said,
getting free shots at ball carriers because he's not getting touched.
Right, so that's going to suggest an outside. And I'm sure every team has looked at it the same way. I'm sure every team has said, well, we're not running inside. We're going to run out. We're going to run. But you know what? Michigan may have to do both and sacrifice a few plays to keep Georgia's defense honest,
yep.
Right? And then do something. You know,
it sets things up, Steve. We're out of time, but you think,
oh my gosh,
they ran like five counters in the game. None of them worked. None of them worked. They didn't. I was talking to you in the press box.
Yes,
I was like, man, a counter's not working today.
Yes,
and the wheel route that they ran to the one that he hit, he turned one down and he shouldn't have. But there was one that he hit to Eric Aug going down the sideline. It was off counter action. So the counters that they ran unsuccessfully, that Iowa triggered on and blew up, they triggered on that counter and Michigan hit them with a wheel route down the side.
And briefly, as I say goodbye here, the tight ends, how they've emerged from a liability standpoint at the beginning of the season where you couldn't depend on them to catch a ball. One hand grabs now. They've evolved to the point of not only being steady, to scoring touchdowns, to contributing to the offense in a meaningful way. Now they're doing one-handed grabs in the Big Ten championship game? Amazing. Tight ends, that last element of that offense coming to work.
Yes, sir. We have weeks to break this down, folks. I know you're going to be with us and looking forward to it. We'll tell you about our plans as we get them together for down in Miami. And just so you know, we'll be back at Slippery Noodle. Michigan is in Indianapolis. We'll be back at the Slippery Noodle. You better join us. I put the call out to the people and you showed up. and you showed out, and I appreciate that about you. We got to get out of here. Thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll.
Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.